This is Margaret Cho, and you're listening to The Bicast, podcasting for the bisexual community.
A trans oral archivist, is that correct?
Oral historian.
Oral historian. So, here we go. Please welcome with me our Friday evening keynote, Andrea Jenkins.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
How are you guys doing this evening? I don't know if I believe you guys. I know it's Friday night, it's been a long week, but how are you guys doing tonight? This is a big deal. This is the BeCause Conference. BeCause started in 1999, formally. And there was a lot of organizing that happened before that. So this is a really, I think, a good chance to speak with you guys and talk a little bit about my story and leadership and intersections. So I was really hear all of the talks beforehand and sort of how those same ideas that other people are thinking about, I've been sort of thinking about too. And so I titled this talk, Reimagine Leadership. Reimagine Leadership. Justice is what love looks like in public. MLK. Not me.
Okay.
Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King. And before I go too far, I just want to acknowledge that this land-grant university sits on stolen land of the indigenous peoples of this land. And our country was built on the slave labor of Africans who were brought to this country in chains. Those are my ancestors. And I think it's important to recognize the context in which this speech is being delivered. And this is not to make anybody feel guilty, but maybe feeling uncomfortable is a way that allows us to hear the messages, at least that I'm trying to make. And I had a really interesting coincidence this morning. I was on Facebook scrolling a little bit, and Minnie Bruce Pratt, partner with Leslie Feinberg, who passed away on November 14th last year, 2014, and changed the Facebook page to a new picture of Leslie. And it really captured my attention because I had already written Leslie into my speech, and so I responded, you know, Eagles, I'm just glad you did this and put Leslie's spirit and image and I think devotion to this movement, really this human rights movement, into the world. And, you know, Leslie taught me and generations after me that the struggle for transgender rights is the struggle for human rights. The struggle for immigration rights. The struggle for reproductive rights, women's rights, workers' rights, dismantling prison industrial complex. Mm-hmm. It means seeing the intersections of my struggle with your struggle and figuring out ways to work together for all of humanity, not just a single issue. So you guys have invited me to speak this, what I believe to be a very prestigious conference. And it means so much. I think it means that I've put in a lot of years of work trying to advance this movement, trying to ensure that trans voices were always a part of the conversation. It also means that I have survived something that unfortunately 10 transgender women of color cannot say today, because they've been murdered in 2015. Being 53 years old is a revolutionary act for African American trans women. And I acknowledge that I am really, really blessed. I just want the same for my trans brothers and trans sisters and for all of humanity, really. But I think it starts there. Camille asked for a poem. Here's a poem. Life's strange. Crimson sounds emanate from the darkness, alert you, listen. With an open heart, it's not your duty per se. Yet, like sunrise, you always appear. Steady and sure on the turbulent rivers that in unison can create waves of energy that flow outward, leaving devastation in its wake. Swollen waters fill my lungs. I can't breathe. The light gets brighter and brighter, and all of a sudden I realize the beginning is near. I've been waiting for this moment for all my life. Oh Lord. So this past week, I started a brand new chapter in a book of my life. I am a transgender oral historian for the Treader Collection at the University of Minnesota. The Treader Collection here at the U provides a record of GLBT thought, knowledge, and culture for current and future generations. It's available to students, researchers, and members of the general public. Transgender Oral History Project will collect up to 400 hours of oral history involving 200 to 300 individuals over the next 3 years. This unique opportunity allows me the chance to reimagine everything. In a speech by Grace Lee Boggs, she says, "We are at a point of cultural revolution in ourselves and in our institutions that is as far-reaching as the transition from hunting and gathering to agriculture 11,000 years ago, and from agriculture to industry a few hundred years ago. How do we reimagine education? How do we reimagine community? How do we reimagine family? How do we reimagine sexual identity? How do we reimagine everything in light of a change that is so far-reaching and is our responsibility to make?" She says, "We have to think beyond capitalist categories. We can't expect them to make it. We have to do the reimagining ourselves. That's why we have to talk about revolution these days. We have to get rid of the old ideas of leadership and followership to use our imagination to create freedom." So I want to talk about the power of identity. We all have identities. And I suspect that if you're at this conference, at least bisexual is one of your identities. My identity as an out trans woman of color who is bisexual, queer, and unapologetically humanitarian does not fully define me. What I hope defines me is the integrity that comes with claiming that identity. Let me be the first to tell you that I am human. With all the frailties that plague all humans, I procrastinate. I probably don't call my mother enough. Certainly not as much as she'd like me to. And I do get hangry. That's hungry plus angry. And I'm very grumpy when I wake up in the morning. That's what I'm about that. Yeah, I believe the key foundation to leadership is integrity. Integrity means having the courage to not only say the right thing, but do the right thing. Integrity means acknowledging your role in the movement and fulfilling that obligation. Integrity means speaking truth about the structures that perpetuate the injustices and inequities in our society. Injustices like the genocide and systematic displacement of indigenous and native peoples of this land. The enslavement of African Americans that created the obscene material wealth that fuels capitalism. Inequities that are cemented in place by white supremacy. That imprisons more black men than any place in the world. Mirroring the system of slavery that continues to disaffect the black community to this day. As a queer woman of color, we must reimagine what love looks like in public. We must begin to work for trans justice to advance all of the human rights movements taking place all around the world. I want to quote Darnell L. Moore and Charles Stevens in an open letter to mainstream LGBT organizations that have remained silent on Black Lives Matter. Movements are not built on the backs of the most vulnerable in the service of the needs and whims of the most privileged. Movements are built and succeed when they begin in the most marginal of spaces, always evaluating who's positioned in the center of power and always ensuring that asymmetrical power relations are corrected so that we might exist in a more equitable society. So what does trans justice look like? It's a movement that works to mobilize trans and allied communities into action around pressing issues like access to education, employment, health care, and basic needs, incarceration, immigration, disability rights, reproductive rights, policy reform, racial and economic justice, art and culture, and coalition building within trans communities. On the most basic level, it is rooted in the right to self-determine our gender expression, free from all forms of violence and oppression, including personal and state violence. And I remember being in first grade and grew up in Chicago, and we were being bused to this very nice neighborhood. The name of the school was Miser Elementary. And I was taking piano lessons, and my teacher told my mother that I was a very strong student and convinced her to come up with the $2 per month so that I could continue. My mother agreed, but knew it was almost impossible for her to come up with the funds every month. And many months she didn't. But the teacher would still let me go to the class. remember one month, one of the students' envelopes came up missing. The teacher thought I took it because my mother hadn't paid my fees that month. She wrote a note for me to take home, telling my mother of her suspicions. My mother wrote back that she had indeed given me money for that month. That wasn't my biggest that year. See, this was 1968, the year Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. And riots broke out all over America, and on April 4th, all the black kids were sent home early. They never returned to that school again. Who knows if I would have had a career at the piano? I had a shot, though. But racism and bigotry cost me that opportunity. Despite these early challenges and systemic oppressions, I was a good student. I went to the number one rated public high school in Chicago, Lindblom High School. Lindblom was a vigorous college preparatory school, and about at least 80% of my classmates went on to college. I applied to the College of Liberal Arts right here at the University of Minnesota. And I was conditionally accepted if I attended their Summer Institute for Minority, and I really dislike that term. I prefer students of color, but that was the language in 1979. And instead of being in CLA, which was the college I applied to, they would admit me to General College, which was for remedial students. Even though my grades, my ACT scores, etc., were sufficient to be on par with the broader student population, that was my choice. I actually surprised myself that first year, doing much better than I had even expected. This was another situation of stereotyping that placed me in an inferior position that perpetuates this vicious cycle of self-fulfilling prophecy, of low expectations, low achievement. In year two, my grades began to suffer. Money, housing, and my gender identity became larger issues my sophomore year. I had to leave the university. Yes, I said my gender identity. And this is not an effort to conflate this speech in any way, but I can't stand in front of you without not acknowledging the intersection of my transgender status and racism. See, once upon a time, I was a picture perfect model of an African American. Tall, dark, handsome. I was well respected in many circles, dated beautiful women. I even belonged to a secret brotherhood. I played with balls. Basketballs, footballs, volleyballs, tennis balls. Yes, I was one of those guys who constantly scratched my balls. All testosterone all the time. Over time, however, I came to grips with my true internal feelings. I had feelings of fusion of this obviously male body and what I call female psyche. By this time, it was crying time. One time, I fucked three different women all in the same day. True story. Morning time, noon time, nighttime. By this time, I was overcompensating for what I thought made men men. I was trying to prove myself to others that I had what it took. What in fact is it that makes me? Is it taking responsibility for one's community? Can a man shed tears? Can a black person live free and a racist America? And what constitutes the attributes of a woman? Where is that line that distinguishes the differences between others? late poet and spoken word artist Tay Coo Santiago once said, "I once married a woman who had her back turned. Women bleed. They make babies. They bred. Black women shoot on, sit on stoops all over this country and braid the hair of young gangbangers. They are the backbone of the community. They create a way out of no way. But I will never make babies. Never. I still a woman. Blood will never escape from between my legs unless I cut myself shaving in the shower. I still a woman. And yet the Creator has imbued me with the heart of a woman. A woman's spirit, if you will. This has enabled me to cross the demarcation of genital-based gender and explore the state of in-betweenness. This combination of being African-American and transgender deeply impacts the price I pay to live in this society. It was the main reason I left school. You see, one day my roommate came home and found me having sex with an older white man. He was incensed. He was black and he couldn't imagine continuing to live with a fag. So he kicked me out and I had no resources and nowhere to go back home to Chicago. He didn't know that I wasn't gay, but rather transgender. And there was no way that I could admit that to anyone, not even to myself. When I got home, I had to tell my mother something. I'm coming home in the middle of the semester, and she's like, "What happened?" And so I came out as bisexual, which was a reality for me. I was truly bisexual, still am. But it wasn't the full truth. I hadn't admitted that truth to myself yet. I didn't have that kind of integrity. That would come for some time. After a marriage, a baby, after a bitter divorce, and several failed relationships, I was finally able to come to grips with my reality and begin to live authentically with myself and others. So, what has this cost me as a transgender woman? Maybe I can break it down to you like this. 18. It's been 18 hours since her last meal. Her head is spinning with desperation. Hypersexualized body looks good, but the 5 o'clock shadow is 9 hours over the limit, and her wig is beginning to look bad. She was 18 when she left home. College was life on the streets. The school day was long, seemed like it never ended. Many nights spent on sticky tricks sofas, days spent as a social activist, marching, lobbying, organizing. 18 trans women of color gathering for an outpouring of self-love. Laverne Cox said that loving a trans woman of color is a revolutionary act. Sisters doing it for themselves. Walking the streets of Bangkok, Thailand, 18 hours before a life-altering surgery, body didn't evolve the way she dreamed of in her tiny bed, inside of a shared bedroom that proved to be unsafe. Her mind flashed back to that birth certificate, assigned male at birth, socialized in a patriarchal world, yet unable to fully relate to the constant challenge of trying to live her truth in this upside-down reality. 18 times, she threw out all of her women's clothing, known in the community as the Purge. Ridding oneself of all the reminders of the transgressions she's contemplated by the day, annually for as long as she could remember. Doctors prescribed birth control pills for women for approximately 18 days a month, but some trans women take estrogen every day. The desired effects never really come, though. Still, she remains faithful to the goddess. 18 candles on Transgender Day of Remembrance. 18 trans women of color murdered, and not always by those who hate them, but by men who have made love and shared love with them, but want to keep those secrets in the dark. Shout out to 18 trans sisters out there doing the damn thing. Chernobyl Vico, Lourdes Ashley Hunter, Ariana Lent, Cecilia Chong, Valerie Spencer, Ashley Love, Lena Gossett, Erica Carter, Monica Roberts, Miss Major, Janet Mock, Laverne Cox, Tracy McDaniel, Angelica Ross, Cece McDonald, Paradise Lachey, Rahima Martinez, June Nees. It's been 18 years since this journey began. A long way from the days of fear and loathing, and although her life may seem charmed to outsiders, she knows that her trans brothers and trans sisters are struggling out there, so she tells their story. Everywhere she's invited, the Mayo Clinic, the Program of Human Sexuality, All Gender Health Seminars, the Women's Foundation, Ramsey County, the Human Rights Campaign Dinner, the Center for Disease Control, McAllister College, the Arcus Foundation, the University of Minnesota Medical School, Hamline University, the Minnesota Transgender Health Coalition, Metropolitan State, Trans Ohio, the Minneapolis Urban League, HRSA, the Health Resources and Service Administration, the Task Force for Creating Change Conference, and everywhere else she goes. Visibility is the key to changing the narrative that shapes this poem. The tables are rapidly turning. Attention is being paid. Time magazine put a trans woman of color on the cover and said the transgender movement was at the tipping point, America's next civil rights frontier. And while that is true, 18 trans women of color will likely be arrested tonight, processed and locked up with the male population or placed in solitary for their own protection, becoming more victims to the prison industrial complex that thrives on poor black bodies to fuel the monetization of black labor for corporate interests. How does she get through this madness? She remembers those 18 hours of hunger, those 18 years of struggle, those 18 trances showing each other love. She remembers the 18 hours strolling around Bangkok, the 18 times she purged, and the 18 lives honored on Trans Day of Remembrance. The 18 different places where she shared their story of brilliance, resilience, and beauty. All right, John, I can clap on that.
All right, yeah.
Thank you. So as I mentioned earlier in this speech, I'm the oral historian of the Transgender Oral History Project. I believe that it's critical to be visible and to have trans narratives preserved for posterity. But more importantly, I believe these stories will provide a record for young people growing up looking for role models, or as Laverne Cox of Orange Is the New Black says, possibility models for their inspiration as they navigate their paths to gender congruency. Additionally, it provides insights to allies and to family members on subjects that are sometimes difficult to explain face-to-face. I intend to interview a broad range of trans and gender non-conforming people ranging in ages, ethnicities, sexual orientations. Please hold me accountable as I move through this journey. For me, to the integrity that it takes to be complete. So, I'm going to leave you guys with one more poem, and this piece is called Queer Manifesto. It starts with epigraph. Why do we adopt the conventions for lack of a better word, the oppressor? Carol Masso, Break Rule. At 12 years old, you realized that boys could never give birth to babies, only to ideas. So you got a bright one. Decided at that moment to make yourself stand out. Colored your hair magenta and developed a penchant for dark clothing and heart-throbbing rock and roll. Or maybe you were the one who tried to find a home in hip-hop, discovering you weren't welcome there either. So you created your own beat. If there is such a thing as an oppressor, then there must be an oppressor. It is a mutually accepted relationship. Why do we strive for the same ideals as the oppressor? I married a man who had his back turned. Said he learned how to cook from his father. So we only knew how to make franks and beans. And we ate that shit every night. And on days when we made love, he farted the whole fucking time. Note to self. Never get married again. Why are we afraid to let real love shine? Afraid to say, I'm in love with a big, black, transgender goddess, and she loves me back, so fuck you. You might have been the one to grow up hearing YMCA, or the words to this song at an early age. First, I was afraid, I was petrified, kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. And you survived. And the color came back to your world and you survived. Started to see more clearly through your yellow tinted horn-rimmed sunglasses. Be proud, young boy, young girl. Started parading through the streets of Los Angeles, San Francisco, Atlanta, Chicago, Minneapolis, New York City. Started creating your own organizations. HRC, Out Front, Philanthropon, the National Gay Lesbian Task Force, ACT UP, Soul Essence, and the list goes on. If we are the oppressed, it is imperative that we not become the oppressors. We gotta love every color in the rainbow. Respect the beauty that lives in each and every one of us. When your blues become my blues, we can sing, Oh Happy Day. Be brave, lead with integrity. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
The views expressed on the Bicast do not necessarily represent those of Binet USA or the Bicast crew.
Look at that.